Wait a minute, honey. Nobody whistles at an orgy. Unless you know something we don't know. I'm willing to try anything, you know. Holy smokes. Ladies and gentlemen, I am looking down right now at this minute here in the limelight on a scene of such debauchery as to make a man of goodwill sicken in his marrow of his bones. It's a sickening sight. It's a large lady standing on a table over near the ice machine, and she's carrying what appears to be at this distance the head of John the Baptist. Actually, it's her old man Clarence. A sickening thing, you know. It's terrible. Well, you know, speaking of sickening things, and the, you know, by the way, somebody here during the intermission, I'll have to continue that story because it builds into exactly what I'm driving at about the inexplicability of life. Now, life, we all know, you know. Let's face it. Now, we're all in this together. Right, gang? Always one guy from among the bottom of the stools at the bar. Holly's right. You notice the people in the big time tables here look at you blankly? They ain't in nothing with you at all. Oh, no. They're the ones, I'm serious, week after week, they're at the giant games. Yeah, that's the in crowd. Week after week, they're at Shea Stadium watching the Jets. And week after week, we're where we are. The out crowd. You know, just walking around. You know, it's blacked out. And all we can do is go down to Needick's. You know, is where the out crowd lives. Have you ever, you know, you've heard the term the beautiful people? Well, that must mean that the other crowd are the ugly people. How does it feel, gang? Let's give the ugly people a hand. Come on. Hey, what do you say all together now? We boo the beautiful people. Boo! They're all sitting up there at Sardi's right now. You know, they're at Sardi's. They got those shades on. There's a whole crowd of them up there at Arthur's. And they're, you know, the behind is going... You know, and where are we? The limelight. Sitting there eating piccalilli. All right, all together now. Let's give those beautiful people a big rousing boo. Boo! Doesn't that feel better? But you notice you're still at the limelight. Doesn't do you any good, you know. Oh, yeah, yeah. You find rank all over life, no matter where you go. I mean, there's nothing worse than rank, and it's everywhere. I remember I'm in the Army, see, me and Gasser and Edwards, and we're walking past the BOQ. Now, the BOQ is the Bachelor Officers' Quarters, and that's kind of, at least on our post, it was kind of a Taj Mahal. I mean, oh, yeah, you could just see it. It was painted. I mean, that itself gave it some kind of class. You should have seen the tents that we lived in. Yeah, we lived in these little obscenities called pyramidal tents. I mean, ever since that time, guys have been trying to talk me into camping. Oh, yeah, you know, and anytime some camping nut comes around and says, gee, Shep, I'll tell you, there is nothing more exciting than camping. Why, the feeling of lying there in the ground with nothing but a thin piece of canvas between you and the Big Dipper. I know that son of a gun. I wish radio was grown up. I could call him what he really is. I mean, you know, you see these guys over at Abercrombie and Fitch. And they're walking around, there's the camping department, and they have all these beautiful tents. Zippers all up and down the sides, little air conditioning units blowing stuff in. Oh, yeah, some tents today have even got bars built in them. Oh, the whole thing, see, And once in a while, I sneak into Abercrombie & Fitch. I'm passing, see? Because, you know, Abercrombie & Fitch, friends, is strictly officers' company. This is officers' territory. And I sneak up there, and I walk around and look at those tents, see? But then I get in the elevator, and I see the guys that buy them, these big, tall, red-faced guys. They've got these beautiful coats with fur collars. They've got these Russian Astrakhan hats on. You know, and I'm wearing my trench coat from Robert Hall. You know, the one that comes with the built-in leaks. You know, it saves a lot of work on your part. And I'm waiting, you know, for that day. But every time we used to walk past BOQ, Gasher would look over there. I would look over there. Edwards would look. We'd walk past. We'd watch, and we'd see the lieutenants once in a while go by the windows. And Gasher would say, "You know, Shep, I understand. Now, it's hard to believe, but I understand them guys have got coat hangers." We'd stand there, you know, look. And then Edwards would say, "And not only that, I understand that they got more than 3 suits of underwear." And then, of course, it always occurred to me that they never used it. Somehow, they lived in a life where none of that kind of stuff was necessary, you know. Oh, yeah, we'd walk past, we'd see the officers' mess hall. It was so beautiful. You could see they had tablecloths. And they actually had knives and forks. And then you used to see our mess hall. Now, our mess hall was a long shed made out of 4 sticks in the wood, you know, wood in the ground, long shed. And in the middle of it was a great big long trough. The KPs would pour stuff in it. We would all line up. And you know, of course they had special food for those troughs. I remember SOS was served. And you pour it in there like that. The guy would take a great big tub of oatmeal and pour it in. Would mix all up, you know, and then they would put the powdered eggs on top of that. And he'd just say, "Well, how come powdered eggs on top of the SOS? He'd say, "Well, we're not going to have time for breakfast tomorrow. Might as well have it now." You know, they'd mix the Jell-O and the ice cream with it. You'd take your little mess can, you know, your little mess kit. You'd sit. You had a great big spoon. You know, they figured that most GIs that were under the rank of tech sergeant were not housebroken. So they didn't give us a fork. We had a big spoon. I remember sitting there with this big spoon. Like that. Looking around, my mess kit hanging like this. And about every 2 weeks, my mess kit would go like this. I've got it all full of SOS, see? Well, you know, you get used to anything. It's raining on me, see? And Edwards is sitting there next to me. He's spooning in the Jell-O. And then my crummy mess kit would do this. I'm sitting, see? And then it would go, oop. Now I got a knee that is nicely iced with SOS. Well, what do? You got a choice. Yeah, that's right, honey. Oh, I ate more dinners. I remember Thanksgiving dinner in Company K. Now, you always hear about Thanksgiving. You know, Thanksgiving is coming up Thursday, and there are millions of GIs are going to have their Thanksgiving. I'll tell you how Thanksgiving actually works in the Army. What? Oh, her girdle's tight. I see. Hear her giggling over there. Well, I, you know, every one of these holidays would come up, see, and there would be excitement would go through Company K. Big excitement, see. And always the question was, who's going to get to pass? there was a rule that one-third of the company always had to remain on duty during all the major holidays. And that's still true, by the way. And so there was about a month before there was a big holiday. Everybody in Company K would drift apart. Look at each other. Suspicious. You know that, is he going to be the one that's going to get out? Am I going to be stuck here? Oh, no. We'd shift around. We'd wait in the mess hall line. Nobody's talking. It's getting tense. It's getting more nervous as day after day goes by. And now it is 2 days before Thanksgiving. And at noon, they are to announce who is getting the pass. We're waiting. Now 11:30. They blow the bugle for chow. How many of you know what the bugle call for chow is? Let's hear it. Listen to it. Shh. Do you remember the words to that? They went ta 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 ta. There are words to that. If I ever used those words, I would be off the radio for the next 1,000 years. Oh, yeah, there are words to all the bugle calls. You ought to hear the word, you know, the one, the charge song, you know, ta-ta, you know that one? You ought to hear the actual words to that. It is quite the opposite of charge. And it has something to do with the officers. It's a word of advice. Think a little bit, friends. There he got it. Well, I'll tell you what it is. It was darn you, Lieutenant. And so, you know, 2 days before, everybody's nervous and excited. And so they blow chow call. You know, at noon, they were going to post it down on the bulletin board. Everybody's too excited to eat. Well, it wasn't anything. You weren't missing much. But everybody's excited and everybody's getting all dressed up because today we're going to have a half a day off because it was going to be a 3-day holiday for those guys that were getting the pass, a 3-day pass that was good through Thanksgiving. And you just don't know how a pass feels when you have been 11 months in the boondocks. I mean, we grew boondocks. We had a boondock garden. Our place, I'll tell you, a typical big excitement, boredom was so much, so palpably a part of our lives, that boredom, you could swim through it. You'd go down through the company street, all these little tents, and you'd find yourself drifting. Your mind has been turned off for 18 months. There's not even a faint buzz. You know, you just year after year goes by. And you'd sit there, you know, and you could sit in your tent. You'd sit on your footlocker. You're off. We used to work 4 hours on the radar set and 4 hours off. And you'd get off of duty, see, your 4 hours. Like, say, at noon, you're going to be off till 4. And you'd walk in, you'd sit down on your footlocker. This is the real army, friends. No kidding. You'd sit in your footlocker. And you'd sit there and you'd watch the guy on the footlocker opposite you polish his belt buckle. And he is polishing automatically. He has been polishing his belt buckle since he was inducted at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, 3.5 years before. And that's all he does. He has worn out 24 buckles. He just keeps polishing. And sitting over here on that footlocker is the letter writer. Yeah. And every army, there's one poor son of a gun. I mean, in every outfit, he's gray. He's the kind of guy nobody ever talks to. He talks to nobody. And his uniforms are always kind of lumpy. And to prove that he does not like the army at all, he never gets them cleaned. So his collars turn up. He's the little quiet gray man. And all through his Army career, he's bent over this tablet, writing, eternally writing, always writing. And you watch him for a while. You watch the guy polish his belt buckle. Then you look over here, and Edwards was a shoe man. Now, there are all kinds of fetishes. Edwards had the shoe thing going. Edwards polished his shoes, I would say, on an average of 17 hours a day. All his waking hours, he's just sitting there with the shoe rag. Then he would go, ptooey. Ka-ta-pow. He was like, I'll tell you, it's like Captain Ahab. He was always searching for the ultimate shine. He was always looking, you know, and it was always thought that if he ever reached that theoretical point where all light is reflected from his shoe. You follow me in physics? There is no light loss. That there was a rumor that if anybody was going to get to that point, it was going to be Edwards. And by the time we were discharged, Edwards would have one day reached the critical point when the light hitting his shoe would equal the light of the sun. And the whole damn company would blow up. There were theories. What would happen? See? You know? And so he's working away. I'm sitting. Well, can you imagine? Now you know what kind of a life it was. Now, it wasn't a bad life. It was just a non-life. No, it wasn't bad. You get used to that. You know, it's like being in some kind of great big sea of vaguely melted taro syrup. And you just sort of float through it. And, you know, and you get so that all the things which, as a civilian, would irritate you, when you're in the Army, you just accept them as a matter of course. And so I can remember constantly they'd have an inspection. For example, oh yes, one of the typical things, whistle blows. It's 2 a.m, you're asleep, and you hear, wah! You go, wah! Then you hear in the darkness under the mosquito bar, you hear Gasser. He goes, wah! And you hear, wah! Then you hear that voice out there. It's Sergeant Kowalski. I'm not kidding. Sergeant Kowalski was a human shark. Kowalski's a little short, angry guy from Scranton. He might be listening tonight. You show up down here, Kowalski. I am among friends. This guy was a little... He was like a fire plug with feet. That about 15 Airedales had been around, you know. Nasty, you know. And he was the kind of guy, little, you know how some kind of people who are particularly short, they get very round, you know, very randy, very raunchy. And he's a little guy, see. And he's about that wide, little, and he's got his hat. He always wore this overseas type, you know, the kind of hat, the cloth cap, pulled right down here, tilted up. Had this big thing with the bolt tip sticking out. And he always wore signal cord tabs up here and green sunglasses. Green sunglasses. He would wear them when he was asleep, I guess. Although there was a rumor that son of a gun never slept. And so Kowalski, at 3 a.m, is blowing a whistle. All right, all you men, fall out. Helmet line up. Raincoat and GI shoes. Fall out now. The doctor is on his way. And you can hear them coughing in the darkness as the doctor's working his way up. I mean, you don't even question this stuff in the Army. Just part of life, you know. I remember one time asking him, well, where do you think I've been? Haven't been out of this hole for the last year and a half. He says, it's going on your record. Wonder what she's thinking of. And so, you know, these little things, you know, keep building up. And so you can imagine, you can seriously imagine just how a three-day pass away from this life would feel. I mean, you can't believe it. We'd see that pass. You could almost see 3 days of freedom hanging in the air. And so now it's 11:30. They're blowing the bugle for chow. Now, if you think 11:30 is early to eat lunch, remember, we've been up since 3:45. That's when the day in Company K began, at 3:45. You ever seen a movie where they showed breakfast in the Army? Boy, that's a sight. I'll never forget. It's tattooed in my mind. At 4:45, it's always cold. Even if you're on the Amazon River, it's always cold. It's always raining. And I can remember standing in a line with the rain coming down. Yeah, and the whole line is just falling off asleep. And there's a corporal going along hitting you with a rubber truncheon. Keep it moving, you guys. Keep it moving. You'd move forward, see, and you're getting that last 2.5 milliseconds of sleep. You're milking it, see. Because sleep is the only thing that the private citizen owns. There is no rank in sleep. That when a general's asleep, is he a general? Does he see himself in his dreams saying, "Follow me"? I mean, when a PFC's asleep, does he see himself in his dreams as a general? No. He's always some kind of a civilian, running over clouds. 18 girls with him, you know, with great big gauzy things floating from him. So we're always milking that last millisecond of sleep. Our mess kits. Moving forward. And then you knew that sleep was over the minute you felt the weight of the powdered eggs on your shoe. Because in the darkness, you see, here's a PFC who's back of the great big GI cans, and he's serving. He's also asleep. He's gone. You know, and you just keep moving by. The rain is coming down. Another great day is about to begin. The sun is peeking up over the power shed. The rain is coming down. And every once in a while, he would miss a guy. Guy just keeps walking by. And the sergeant, you know, the mess sergeant, would holler, "Hey, get that guy in the end there." Guy, get it in the back of the net. Now, do you think Laurence Olivier could play that scene? Let's hear it. I play a whole chow line. Speaking of SOS, that reminds me, what station is this? And what magnificent Babylonian city are we in tonight? There's... And somehow he keeps reaching in and pulling me out. In fact, you know, I thought I might just apply for permanent jury duty. You know, just go down there. It's so much trouble traveling back and forth. And so we're waiting in line. And now we're sitting suspiciously. And you know, we've got our usual midday meal consisted of candied beets. Now, can you understand why the Army had this thing on candied beets? I to this day I can't eat a candied beet. That candied beets. And next to the candied beets would be this unidentifiable gray thing. That was called the main course. It had paste over it. That's the little gray thing there. And then next to that is a chunk of GI bread. About that thick on one end. You've had that, hasn't it, fella? Oh, yeah, it's about that thick on one end. It gets real skinny on the other end. And it's got a 7-inch thick crust. And right in the middle of it is a little tiny, maybe a kidney bean-shaped size of white bread. All around it is crust. So there you sit. You got your You got your canteen cup. Now, what they served in our outfit, ours was a tropical outfit. So we were served a special drink called the Purple Death. Yeah, it was fermented raisin Kool-Aid. Now, don't ask me where they got it. It was a Purple Death. Guys used to use it to write home with and everything. Make your tongue permanently yellow, you know. We'd sit there with the Purple Death. And you know, even while you held it, how many of you have ever took chemistry? Well, I'll tell you, there are very few things that will oxidize aluminum. And we would sit there and you'd see the bubbles coming up, you know. There's a chemical reaction going on with this stuff. Yeah, we had, and whatever it was, I think only the Signal Corps got this because I can remember our first sergeant. Once in a while, I'd be on KP. You know, I'd be standing in the back of the mess hall, and the first sergeant would, you'd have all these little jobs. You know, most people think that KP consists of only one job, washing dishes. Oh, no, that's a good job. You don't know what are some of the other ones. Like, for example, one day, you know, everybody used to want to get the dish thing, you know, that was called the China Clipper. Yeah, I call it China Clipper, see, because there were other terrible jobs. For example, the best job on KP was called the outside man. Now, the outside man was always a short, fat guy who came to the mess hall a good half hour before the rest of the KPs, so he could get that job. Now, the outside man consists, he just stands outside. No one ever knew what the outside man... I'm telling you, right, fellas? I'm not making it up. The outside man would stand out there, see? I'm not making it up. So everybody liked this, and you'd go past day after day, and you'd see an outside man just standing there. He's asleep. Some guys would sleep through their whole KP and just stay there all night. All the rest of the KPs are gone. He's still there. It's an outside man. But one of the worst jobs is what they call the back kitchen man. Oh, I remember one day I'm late for KP, see, and that the last two guys always got it. And so I come running in. I've got my KP fatigues on. Now, every guy had two sets of fatigues. One set of fatigues was for wearing. The other set was for KP. And these had not been to the laundry in over 2 years. And they were fermented. Oh, yeah, I had a set of KP... really, I had a set of KP fatigues that had moss under the arms. Had little twigs growing out of it. Oh, yeah, and you'd see it at night. It would move. And I'd lie in the sack next to it, and I'd hear it talking. Would talk to itself. Once in a while, it would get up and go over and visit Gasser's fatigues. God only knows what they did. I don't know. Not lighter, you know. And so now, here's a typical back kitchen man. I'm late. See, I come running up the steps of the mess hall. And already, I can see in the back the guys on the China Clipper. They're washing the first, you know, they're washing the mess sergeant's gigantic plate on which the only steak that was issued to Company K would be eaten on. In fact, we got one steak a month. And the mess sergeant immediately took it, unwrapped it, and in front of all the KPs, ate it. It's prerogative of rank, you know, rank. So the KPs are back there washing the first cups, and I can see the outside man standing out there. And there's only me and Edwards. We're late. We come rushing up, and here's the sergeant, the cook. All right, you guys, Shepherd, Edwards. Let's see what I can do with you today. I got an idea. All right, you two guys, go on back to the other side of the icebox and go into the storeroom. In the storeroom, you'll find on the floor something for you. Get at it. Okay? On the double move. Get the lead. You'll have to fill in the rest. So Edwards and I run in there, happy, you see, that we were going to get nothing less than this. And we run into this room, and there on the floor, you can't believe it, on the floor, the first time we'd ever seen anything like this in Company K. I mean, our food consisted of stuff that was always dried. I mean, it came in little sacks, dried eggs, dried potatoes, I mean, dried Kool-Aid. And there on the floor, piled up, I mean, this high, great, you can't believe it, 400 fresh chickens. With the feathers on. The teeth sticking out. They all had eyes. I looked at those 400 chickens. And Edwards looked at those 400 chickens. Edwards was a true city man. He had never seen a chicken outside of a croquet. And the two of us looked at these chickens. And Edwards said, "What are they?" I says, "Chickens, Edwards." He says, "Chickens?" I says, "Chickens." He says, "What do you do with them?" I says, "I have a suspicion." And instantly, the mess sergeant is in. He says, "All right, you guys, I want them fetters off. I want you to unzip them. Remove what you find inside. And I want it all done by noon." Have you ever sat down with a friend of yours and shucked 400 chickens? I'll tell you, it is one of life's more edifying experiences. And we finally got the feathers off of them. And you know that each chicken, even though they had been dead for many, many months, each chicken complained. Feathers all over, see? We got this hot, great big can of hot water. We put each one in the hot water. You know, and each time they go in, they go, "Ah!" Tear the feathers off. And now we've got all these naked chickens. And the mess sergeant comes in. He says, "All right." He says, "Here." He tosses us a couple of great big toad stickers. Edwards has got one. I got the other. He says, "Now here, I want to show you what you do." The sergeant has a knife. So he says, "Here's what you do." You go, "Gah, gah, 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 blah, 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 diggity, 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 boing." There it is. It looks like a real chicken now. You know, like the kind you see in cartoons, you know, with the little feet sticking out. Gee, how did he do it? He said, "Okay, now you do what I do, and do it quick, 400 of them." And he says, "Then you guys can take a half an hour off before you get on those onions." That's 400 pounds of onions going later for us to peel. So we started out to clean the chickens. Sat down, see, took a chicken. Well, now, I, first of all, did not know the chickens were made out of rubber. These were rubber chickens. I mean, they were hard as rock. So I take the knife and go. There's 400 of them piled up. Well, 20 minutes later, I finally make this jagged gash in a chicken. And stuff starts coming out. Edward says, "What's that?" I said, "Well, there's stuff in the chickens." He says, "You mean this is in all chickens?" He says, "Mine's sick. Look at it." I says, "No, that's its liver." He says, "That's liver." Up to that point, you know, chicken liver he had liked. Now he realized where home base was. And so we worked all afternoon on these chickens. And that was the kind of job that the outside man missed. And so getting away from this company was like getting a reprieve from hell. And so we're waiting. We're waiting to see that list. And there it comes. Everybody crowds down there, and they're looking for their name on the list. And the way they did it was to publish the names of the guys who were assigned to duty. So you didn't want to see your name on that list. And I rushed down. Oh, boy. Well, guess whose name? Like Abu Ben Adam. led all the rest. To be assigned to duty over the coming holiday, Shepherd J.P., PFC, 1609-8946, Gasser, Edwards, Zinsmeister. You turn away, and you can hear the rest of the guys hollering, "Whoopee! Hooray! Hooray!" You want to kill them. You know, what is there to be thankful about? And so, Thanksgiving Day dawned bright and early. And there was a special order out that day. Now, this is the way they work Thanksgiving in the Army. A special order came out the night before. And it said, all men in this command who are assigned to Thanksgiving Day duty in the camp will be allowed to sleep until 8 a.m.
Oh, you sleep till 8 o'clock in the morning. Do you know what this means?
I mean, for years it had been 4:15. And so now 4:15 strikes. But you see, the Army is a creature of habit. I mean, so 4:15, which should have gone by quietly, you hear, you wake up. You automatically start putting on your fatigues. And then Gasser says, "Hey, we can sleep till 8. And sure enough, we sank back on our sacks and laid there, and we couldn't sleep. We couldn't sleep. We just lay there and tossed, you know. You get up. Gee whiz, my bunk must have pulled your bunk. Isn't this great, Gasser? Yeah. Hey, Edwards, how about you? Yeah. But for 3.5 hours, we just lay there, staring up. The sun now arches high over Company K. It is Thanksgiving Day. And so we go out now. We stand our little company roll call, 8:30 in the morning. Sergeant Kowalski's out there, that rotten sergeant. He walks up and down in front of us. He's got suntans on now, see. He's dressed up. He said, "Men, today, even though one third of you has to be here in the camp, don't, it ain't no skin off my you-know-what. I don't want nobody to think that I'm going to play no favorites here. And I want one thing for you to remember. This is the best damn company in the whole damn Army, right?" Right. That's right. And then Edwards next to me says, "I wonder what the rest of the Army is like if that's true." You know, there's another side to the story. And then Kowalski said, and this is where the bomb hit. He said, "Men, Lieutenant Cherry and I have decided that we're going to celebrate Thanksgiving here in Company K. And I want all of you guys to dress up in your Class A's. Get off them fatigues. Put on your Class A's. And today at noon, we will begin to celebrate Thanksgiving. All right? Corporal, dismiss the men." And that corporal stands up there. We had this little red-haired corporal from Nashville, who is Kowalski's understudy. He was working in that field, you know. He said, "All right, attention! At ease! Attention! Dismissed!" He just liked to see us squatting down. You know, he played with us there a little bit. And so we split, you know. We go back to our tents, and there's Gasser and Edwards. And Gasser says, "Well, what does this look like?" That's what we're going to celebrate. Well, I guess as long as we're here, we might as well make the best of it. And so we started to get dressed. Now, perhaps you people who've never been in the Army don't know the luxury of getting dressed in a clean pair of suntans. I mean, where you've been, you know, for weeks, you've been taking a shower with a little can of water over your head, You know, and every GI keeps one pair of suntans in reserve. Now, the suntans are the khaki uniforms, and those are kept in reserve for big moments. And so we've got our beautiful new suntans on, all sharp, little hat. It's now about, 10 o'clock in the morning. You know that feeling on Sunday when you're a kid and you're all dressed up? And 2 hours later, you're supposed to go visit your grandmother, and you're told to keep clean, and don't play, don't do nothing, just stand over by the refrigerator. You know that feeling of standing around, all dressed up. You see your kid brother, and he's all dressed up. Well, all of Company K stood around, see. Now, we're assigned to duty, but there's no duty today. We're all dressed up, our ties. Walk around. There are our tents sitting there, you know. The sun is high. And we're waiting for 12. Time dragged. And then at 5 minutes to 12, that bugle blew. That is the chow call. And so we all lined up. Into the mess hall we go. And they've got tablecloths. Somewhere, Sergeant Kowalski has got white tablecloths. All dressed up, we felt, you know, that feeling of being foreign. You don't belong here. Walked in. And there are the KPs, and they're wearing Class A's. They're walking around with trays. We sit down. And each one of us has got a new clean mess kit. We had no crockery in this company. We each had a new mess kit sitting there. We're waiting for food. And then suddenly, from out behind the mess hall, came Sergeant Kowalski with Lieutenant Cherry. And they've got a great big tureen. Kowalski comes out and he says, "Happy Thanksgiving, you guys." We're sitting. Says, "I said happy Thanksgiving. You're going to have a happy Thanksgiving, right?" I said, "You're going to be happy." Right. And then he opened up the tureen. Big flourish. And it is a turkey. It is a great big turkey made out of SOS. They had molded it. Kowalski says, "All right, KPs, serve the turkey. Isn't it great we got a turkey, fellas?" So they served each one of us little SOS with little cranberries on the side, and they broke out the mixed nuts. We sat there for a while, and then out of the back came the corporal, and he's dressed as a pilgrim. So help me, I'm not kidding you. This is a little pageant in the Army. They made a little, you know, out of black paper. He's got a little pilgrim hat. He comes out with an M1. You know how pilgrims always carry guns? He's got this M1, you know, and he's got a bandolier with the clips hanging all over him. And he says, "Happy Thanksgiving. And now let's all give a moment of prayer, men, for all the things that we got to be thankful for. And I've called out the chaplain from the 4th Battalion, and he's come down to lead you in prayers." And the chaplain walks in. And incidentally, the chaplain was a mythological figure. Right? In fact, all through the Army, there was a word of advice given about chaplains. Whenever you were in trouble, somebody says, "Go tell it to the chaplain." Well, I remember the time I tried it. You know, I had a lot of hang-ups. You know, I wanted to get out for a couple of weeks. And this had been going on for a year. And I went down and I went in to see this chaplain. And in the front of the tent, there was always this guy who was called the chaplain's assistant. He was a tall, thin guy with rimless glasses. You know, that kind that looks like somehow they have been directly hooked into the Word. from birth. And he's standing there at the tent. And I walk up and I said, I want to see the chaplain. I tried to cry, see. I want to see the chaplain. He says, what for? Well, I want to see him. It's a personal problem. He says, well, the chaplain will see you in 10 minutes. But it's got to be important. It's important. It's important. Oh, God, is it important? You know, this chick that I'd been going with back home, there was a little suspicious note creeping into her letters. I wanted to check, you know, hide in the bushes outside of her house and see if what I thought was happening was happening. But I couldn't tell him that. You know, I told him my mother's wooden leg was sprouting. A lot of trouble, you know, and I had to get home and the garage was falling down. My old man's gas tank had a leak in it. I had to help him fix the valves on the holes. You know, it's a terrible moment. And I finally get in to see the chaplain. And he's sitting there. Very official. He's got this round face. He looked like a disenfranchised dentist. You know, he had these big, big rimless glasses, and he's sitting there waiting for me. And out in the front of the tent, the corporal, who was the chaplain's assistant, began to play on what they called an M2 folding model field organ. You ever seen one of those? You can get them on the surplus market. They fold up, you know. And they're GI colored, and he's out there playing, you know, something like da 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 da, something very pious, maybe bringing in the sheaves. That's always a good one. He's playing away, and I walk into the chaplain. The chaplain, remember, is a captain. Don't forget that. I am a yardbird. I am so far down that they wouldn't even let me snipe butts. So I come in, salute. Sir, I have permission to see the chaplain, sir. And he's sitting there. His bar is shining. He looks up and he says, yes. You know how the chaplain sound. And I said, sir, I have permission to see the chaplain, sir, on a personal problem. Problem of greatest import to myself. He says, attention, private. Somehow, you know, I could see things were going downhill. He says, attention. I says, yes, sir. Just give your name, rank, and serial number. I couldn't remember my name. I mean, when you're looking at God, you don't remember a lot of stuff. I said, oh, yes, yes. Shepherd, JP1609-8946, PVT. Yes, sir, company K, sir. Be seated. Well, he was the kind, you know, that had this vast thorax cavity. I mean, he was used to berating an enormous congregation of sinners. And you could just hear, he had that kind of voice, you know, that always says, God. That's a special word, God. And so, he's a very official type, you know. And I sit there and I said, may I tell the chaplain my personal problem, sir? Of course. That's what I am here for. And I am sure that God, in his infinite wisdom, will see fit to give me the proper solution to your problems. I had no idea God somehow was looking down on Company K. I mean, you know, I said, Chaplain, I gotta get home. See, well, my father's a drinker. My poor dad. My father's a drinker. And he fell down the stairs the other day. And he knocked over all the jars that my mother canned the tomatoes. Down in the basement. Oh,
and he broke them off. And now my family say I'm ad-libbing. I can't think what to say. I can't say I gotta go home and see whether my chick is swinging with that guy next door. You know, my dad knocked over the tomatoes, and now my family's got no tomatoes to eat all winter. And my mother needs me to come home and help her can some more tomatoes. My father's drunk, and he can't can the tomatoes. And we need tomatoes. My father, because he's drunk all the time, and he, you know, they're rationing gas back there. They can't get no gas, and this Oldsmobile needs the valves ground. And he's drunk, and he can't grind the valves. And it's burning too much gas. And he can't get no other coupons, and he wants me to help him grind the valves. And the
chaplain's looking.
Yes. I can see that that is a difficult problem. I said, yeah. You don't know my family. My dad beats my mother, too, see? And my mother says if I don't get home pretty soon, that my dad is going to beat her, and I just better get home. And, you know, it's so terrible. My dad never laid a hand on my mother in his whole life. And the only thing my dad ever drank was pickle juice. He used to love to drink pickle juice at night, you know. Once in a while, a can of beer. And if there was anything my mother hated, it was canned tomatoes. She broke out in a rash just thinking of them. But I'm ad-libbing. You know how it is, you whine. You know that old slogan, when we decide, what is it? When we set a course to deceive. Oh, what a tangled web we weave. And I had woven this fantastic web. My old man is a drunkard. He keeps falling down the stairs and breaking the tomatoes. My mother's got a bad leg. It's a wooden leg, and it's got twigs growing out of it. And so I'm waiting, see? And I'm so hungry. And I thought I was going to get the pass. 2 weeks. When all of a sudden the chaplain said to me, God in his infinite wisdom has given me the solution to your program. I realize that your problem is one of infinite difficulties, and I have just one word of advice. Why don't you go and get your card punched? The chaplain was telling me to get my chaplain card punched. He was telling me to take my TS card and get it punched at the chaplain. And then it suddenly occurred to me that even chaplains go someplace to tell it to the chaplain. And the chaplain looks at him and says, well, that's tough, Jack. That's tough. Why don't you get your card punched? And it was that moment that I had this great revelation that no matter where you go, there is always somebody above you. And as you get above him, there's somebody above him. And that ultimately, when you get up finally before that great bar of justice and you look down, and you think you've been a sinner, and the great judge looks at you and says, nope, you're going to heaven. You're going to feel cheated. Because you wonder what the other ones did that you missed. So let's give the sinners a hand out there in the darkness. And we'll be back next. Wait a minute, honey. Nobody whistles at an orgy. Unless you know something we don't know. I'm willing to try anything, you know. Holy smokes. Ladies and gentlemen, I am looking down right now at this minute here in the limelight on a scene of such debauchery as to make a man of goodwill sicken in his marrow of his bones. It's a sickening sight. The large lady standing on a table over near the ice machine, and she's carrying what appears to be at this distance the head of John the Baptist. Actually, it's her old man Clarence. A sickening thing, you know. It's terrible. Well, you know, speaking of sickening things, and the, you know, by the way, somebody here during the intermission. I'll have to continue that story because it builds into exactly what I'm driving at about the inexplicability of life. Now, life, we all know, you know. Let's face it. Now, we're all in this together. Right, gang? Always one guy from among the bottom of the stools at the bar. Holly's right. You notice the people in the big-time tables here look at you blankly? They ain't in nothing with you at all. Oh, no. They're the ones, I'm serious, week after week, they're at the Giant Games. Yeah, that's the in crowd. Week after week, they're at Shea Stadium watching the Jets. And week after week, we're where we are. The out crowd. You know, just walking around. You know, it's blacked out. And all we can do is go down to Needick's. You know, is where the out crowd lives. Have you ever, you know, you've heard the term the beautiful people? Well, that must mean that the other crowd are the ugly people. How does it feel, gang? Let's give the ugly people a hand. Come on. Hey, what do you say all together now? We boo the beautiful people. Boo! They're all sitting up there at Sardi's right now. You know, they're at Sardi's. They got those shades on. There's a whole crowd of them up there at Arthur's. And there, you know, the behind is going. You know, and where are we? The limelight. Sitting there eating Piccalilli. All right, all together now. Let's give those beautiful people a big, rousing boo. Boo! Doesn't that feel better? But you notice you're still at the limelight. Doesn't do you any good, you know. Oh, yeah, yeah. You see, you find rank all over life, no matter where you go. I mean, there's nothing worse than rank, and it's everywhere. I remember I'm in the Army, see, me and Gasser and Edwards, and we're walking past the BOQ. Now, the BOQ is the Bachelor Officers' Quarters, and that's kind of, at least on our post, it was kind of a Taj Mahal. I mean, oh, yeah, you could just see it. It was painted. I mean, that itself gave it some kind of class. You should have seen the tents that we lived in. Yeah, we lived in these little obscenities called pyramidal tents. I mean, ever since that time, guys have been trying to talk me into camping. Oh, yeah, you know, and any time some camping nut comes around and says, gee, Shep, I'll tell you, there is nothing more exciting than camping. Why, the feeling of lying there in the ground with nothing but a thin piece of canvas between you and the Big Dipper. I know that son of a gun. I wish radio was grown up. I could call him what he really is. I mean, you know, you see these guys over at Abercrombie and Fitch. And they're walking around, there's the camping department, and they have all these beautiful tents. Zippers all up and down the sides. Little air conditioning units blowing stuff in. Oh, yeah, some tents today have even got bars built in them. Oh, the whole thing, see. And once in a while, I sneak into Abercrombie and Fitch. I'm passing, see. Because, you know, Abercrombie and Fitch, friends, is strictly officers' company. This is officers' territory. And I sneak up there and I walk around and look at those tents, see? And then I get in the elevator and I see the guys that buy them, these big, tall, red-faced guys. They've got these beautiful coats with fur collars. They've got these Russian Astrakhan hats on. You know, and I'm wearing my trench coat from Robert Hall. You know, the one that comes with the built-in leaks. You know, it saves a lot of work on your part. And I'm waiting, you know, for that day. But every time we used to walk past BOQ, Gasser would look over there. I would look over there. Edwards would look. We'd walk past. We'd watch, and we'd see the lieutenants once in a while go by the windows. And Gasser would say, "You know, Shep, I understand. Now, it's hard to believe, but I understand them guys have got coat hangers." We'd stand there, you know, look. And then Edwards would say, "And not only that, I understand that they got more than 3 suits of underwear." And then, of course, it always occurred to me that they never used it. Somehow, they lived in a life where none of that kind of stuff was necessary, you know. Oh, yeah, once in a while, we'd see the officers' mess hall. It was so beautiful. You could see they had tablecloths. And they actually had knives and forks. And then you used to see our mess hall. Now, our mess hall was a long shed made out of 4 sticks in the wood, you know, wood in the ground, long shed. And in the middle of it was a great big long trough. The KPs would pour stuff in it. We would all line up. And you know, of course they had special food for those troughs. I remember SOS was served. And you pour it in there like that. The guy would take a great big tub of oatmeal and pour it in. Would mix all up, you know, and then they would put the powdered eggs on top of that. And he'd just say, "Well, how come powdered eggs on top of the SOS? He'd say, "Well, we're not going to have time for breakfast tomorrow. Might as well have it now." You know, they'd mix the Jell-O and the ice cream with it. You'd take your little mess can, you know, your little mess kit. You'd sit. You had a great big spoon. You know, they figured that most GIs that were under the rank of tech sergeant were not housebroken. So they didn't give us four. We had a big spoon. I remember sitting there with this big spoon. Like that. Looking around, my mess kit hanging like this. And about every 2 weeks, my mess kit would go like this. I've got it all full of SOS, see? Well, you know, you get used to anything. It's raining on me, see? And Edwards is sitting there next to me. He's spooning in the Jell-O. And then my crummy mess kit would do this. I'm sitting, see? And then it would go, oop. Now I got a knee that is nicely iced with SOS. Well, what do? You got a choice. You eat? Yeah, that's right, honey. Oh, I ate more dinners. I remember Thanksgiving dinner in Company K. Now, you always hear about Thanksgiving. You know, Thanksgiving is coming up Thursday, and there are millions of GIs that are going to have their Thanksgiving. I'll tell you how Thanksgiving actually works in the Army. What? Oh, her girdle's tight. I see. Hear her giggling over there. Well, I every one of these holidays would come up, see, and there would be excitement would go through Company K. Big excitement, see. And always the question was, who's going to get to pass? There was a rule that 1/3 of the company always had to remain on duty during all the major holidays. And that's still true, by the way. And so there was about a month before there was a big holiday. Everybody in Company K would drift apart. Look at each other. Suspicious. You know that, is he going to be the one that's going to get out? Am I going to be stuck here? Oh, no. We'd shift around. We'd wait in the mess hall line. Nobody's talking. It's getting tense. It's getting more nervous as day after day goes by. And now it is 2 days before Thanksgiving. And at noon, they are to announce who is getting to pass. We're waiting. It's now 11:30. They blow the bugle for chow. How many of you know what the bugle call for chow is? Let's hear it. Hey, listen to it.
Shh.
Do you remember the words to that? There were ta 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 ta. There are words to that. If I ever used those words, I would be off the radio for the next 1,000 years. Oh, yeah, there are words to all the bugle calls. You ought to hear the word, you know, the one, the charge song, you know, ta-ta, you know that one? You ought to hear the actual words to that. It is quite the opposite of charge. And it has something to do with the officers. It's a word of advice. Think a little bit, friends. There he got it. Well, I'll tell you what it is. It was darn you, Lieutenant. And so, you know, 2 days before, everybody's nervous and excited. And so they blow chow call, you know, at noon. They were going to post it down on the bulletin board. Everybody's too excited to eat. Well, it wasn't anything. You weren't missing much. But everybody's excited and everybody's getting all dressed up because today we're going to have a half a day off because it was going to be a 3-day holiday for those guys that were getting the pass, a 3-day pass that was good through Thanksgiving. And you just don't know how a pass feels when you have been 11 months in the boondocks. I mean, we grew boondocks. We had a boondock garden. Our place, I'll tell you, big excitement, a typical big excitement. Boredom was so much, so palpably a part of our lives that boredom, you could swim through it. You'd go down through the company street, all these little tents, and you'd find yourself thrifting. Your mind has been turned off for 18 months. There's not even a faint buzz. You know, you just year after year goes by. And you'd sit there, you know, and you could sit in your tent. You'd sit on your footlocker. You're off. We used to work 4 hours on the radar set and 4 hours off. And you'd get off of duty, see, your 4 hours. Like, say, at noon, you're going to be off till 4. And you'd walk in, you'd sit down on your footlocker. This is the real army, friends. No kidding. You'd sit in your footlocker. And you'd sit there and you'd watch the guy on the footlocker opposite you polish his belt buckle. And he is polishing automatically. He has been polishing his belt buckle since he was inducted at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, 3.5 years before. And that's all he does. He's worn out 24 buckles. He just keeps polishing. And sitting over here on that footlocker is the letter writer. Yeah. And every army, there's one poor son of a gun. I mean, in every outfit, he's gray. He's the kind of guy nobody ever talks to. He talks to nobody. And his uniforms are always kind of lumpy. And to prove that he does not like the army at all, he never gets them cleaned. So his collars turn up. He's the little quiet gray man. And all through his army career, he's bent over this tablet. Writing. Eternally writing. Always writing. And you watch him for a while. You watch the guy polish his belt buckle. Then you look over here and Edwards was a shoe man. Now, there are all kinds of fetishes. Edwards had the shoe thing going. Edwards polished his shoes, I would say, on an average of 17 hours a day. All his waking hours, he's just sitting there with the shoe rag. Then he would go, p'tooey. Ka-tum-pow. He was like, I'll tell you, it's like Captain Ahab. He was always searching for the ultimate shrine. He was always looking, you know, and it was always thought that if he ever reached that theoretical point where all light is reflected from his shoe. You follow me in physics? There is no light loss. That there was a rumor that if anybody was going to get to that point, it was going to be Edwards. And by the time we were discharged, Edwards would have one day reached the critical point when the light hitting his shoe would equal the light of the sun. And the whole damn company would blow up. There were theories. What would happen? You know? And so he's working away. I'm sitting. Well, can you imagine? Now, you know what kind of a life it was. Now, it wasn't a bad life. It was just a non-life. No, it wasn't bad. You get used to that. You know, it's like being in some kind of great big sea of vaguely melted taro syrup. And you just sort of float through it. And, you know, and you get so that all the things which, as a civilian, would irritate you, when you're in the Army, you just accept them as a matter of course. And so I can remember constantly they'd have an inspection. For example, oh yes, one of the typical things, whistle blows. It's 2 a.m, you're asleep, and you hear, wah! You go, wah! Then you hear, in the darkness under the mosquito bar, you hear Gasser. He goes, wah! And you hear, wah! Then you hear that voice out there, it's Sergeant Kowalski. I'm not kidding. Sergeant Kowalski was a human shark. Kowalski's a little short, angry guy from Scranton. He might be listening tonight. You show up down here, Kowalski. I am among friends. This guy was a little, he was like a fire plug with feet. That about 15 Airedales had been around, you know. Nasty, you know. And he was the kind of guy, little. You know how some kind of people who are particularly short, they get very round, you know, very randy, very raunchy. And he's a little guy, see. And he's about that wide, little, and he's got his hat. He always wore this overseas type, you know, the kind of hat, the cloth cap, pulled right down here, tilted up. Had this big thing with the boat tip sticking out. And he always wore signal cord tabs up here and green sunglasses. Green sunglasses. He would wear them when he was asleep, I guess. Although there was a rumor that son of a gun never slept. And so Kowalski, at 3 a.m, is blowing a whistle. All right, all you men, fall out. Helmet liner. Raincoat and GI shoes. Fall out now. The doctor is on his way. And you can hear them coughing in the darkness as the doctor's working his way up. I mean, you don't even question this stuff in the Army. Just part of life, you know. I remember one time asking him, well, where do you think I've been? Haven't been out of this hole for the last year and a half. He says, it's going on your record. Wonder what she's thinking of. And so, you know, these little things, you know, keep building up. And so you can imagine, you can seriously imagine just how a 3-day pass away from this life would feel. I mean, you can't believe it. We'd see that pass. You could almost see 3 days of freedom hanging in the air. And so now it's 11:30. They're blowing the bugle for chow. Now, if you think 11:30 is early to eat lunch, remember, we've been up since 3:45. That's when the day in Company K began, at 3:45. Have you ever seen a movie where they showed breakfast in the Army? Boy, that's a sight. I'll never forget. It's tattooed in my mind. At 4:45, it's always cold. Even if you're on the Amazon River, it's always cold and it's always raining. And I can remember standing in a line with the rain coming down. Yeah, and the whole line is just falling off asleep. And there's a corporal going along hitting you with a rubber truncheon. Keep it moving, you guys. Keep it moving. You'd move forward, see, and you're getting that last 2.5 milliseconds of sleep. You're milking it, see. Because sleep is the only thing that the private citizen owns. There is no rank in sleep. That when a general's asleep, is he a general? Does he see himself in his dreams saying, follow me? I mean, when a PFC's asleep, does he see himself in his dreams as a general? No. He's always some kind of a civilian. Running over clouds. 18 girls with him, you know. With great big gauzy things floating from him. So we're always milking that last millisecond of sleep. Our mess kits. Moving forward. And then you knew that sleep was over the minute you felt the weight of the powdered eggs on your shoe. Because in the darkness, you see, here is a PFC who's back of the great big GI cans, and he's serving. He's also asleep. He's gone. You know, and you just keep moving by. The rain is coming down. Another great day is about to begin. The sun is peeking up over the power shed. The rain is coming down. And every once in a while, he would miss a guy. Guy just keeps walking by. And the sergeant, you know, the mess sergeant, will holler, hey, get that guy in the end there. Guy, get it in the back of the neck. Now, do you think Laurence Olivier could play that scene? Let's hear it. I play a whole chow line. Speaking of SOS, that reminds me, what station is this? And what magnificent Babylonian city are we in tonight? There's... And somehow he keeps reaching in and pulling me out. In fact, you know, I thought I might just apply for permanent jury duty. You know, just go down there. It's so much trouble traveling back and forth. And so we're waiting in line. And now we're sitting suspiciously. And, you know, we've got our usual midday meal consisted of candied beets. Now, can you understand why the Army had this thing on candied beets? I to this day, I can't eat a candied beet. At candied beets. And next to the candied beets would be this unidentifiable gray thing. That was called the main course. It had paste over it. That's the little gray thing there. And then next to that is a chunk of GI bread. About that thick on one end. You've had that, hasn't it, fella? Oh, yeah, it's about that thick on one end. It gets real skinny on the other end. And it's got a 7-inch thick crust. And right in the middle of it is a little tiny, maybe a kidney bean-shaped size of white bread. All around it is crust. So there you sit. You got your canteen cup. Now, what they served in our outfit, ours was a tropical outfit. So we were served a special drink called the Purple Death. Yeah, it was fermented raisin Kool-Aid. Now, don't ask me where they got it. It was a Purple Death. Guys used to use it to write home with and everything. Make your tongue permanently yellow, you know. We'd sit there with the Purple Death. And you know, even while you held it, how many of you have ever took chemistry? Well, I'll tell you, there are very few things that will oxidize aluminum. And we would sit there and you'd see the bubbles coming up, you know. There's a chemical reaction going on with this stuff. Yeah, we had, whatever it was, I think only the Signal Corps got this because I can remember our first sergeant. Once in a while, I'd be on KP. You know, I'd be standing in the back of the mess hall, and the first sergeant would, you'd have all these little jobs. You know, most people think that KP consists of only one job, washing dishes. Oh, no, that's a good job. You don't know what are some of the other ones. Like, for example, one day, you know, everybody used to want to get the dish thing, you know, that was called the China Clipper. Yeah, I called the China Clipper, see, because there were other terrible jobs. For example, the best job on KP was called the outside man. Now, the outside man was always a short, fat guy who came to the mess hall a good half hour before the rest of the KPs. So he could get that job. Now, the outside man consists, he'd just stand outside. No one ever knew what the outside man. I'm telling you, right, fellas? I'm not making it up. The outside man would stand out there, see? I'm not making it up. So everybody liked this, and you'd go past day after day, and you'd see an outside man just standing there. He's asleep. Some guys would sleep through their whole KP and just stay there all night. All the rest of the KPs are gone. He's still there. It's an outside man. But one of the worst jobs is what they called the back kitchen man. Oh, I remember one day I'm late for KP, see, and that the last two guys always got it. And so I come running in. I've got my KP fatigues on. Now, every guy had two sets of fatigues. One set of fatigues was for wearing. The other set was for KP. And these had not been to the laundry in over 2 years. And they were fermented. Oh, yeah, I had a set of KP... I had a set of KP fatigues that had moss under the arms. Had little twigs growing out of it. Oh, yeah, and you'd see it at night. It would move. And I'd lie in the sack next to it, and I'd hear it talking. Would talk to itself. Once in a while, it would get up and go over and visit Gasser's fatigues. God only knows what they did. I don't know. Not lighter, you know. And so now, here's a typical back kitchen man. I'm late. See, I come running up the steps of the mess hall. And already, I can see in the back the guys on the China Clipper. They're washing the first, you know, they're washing the mess sergeant's gigantic plate on which the only steak that was issued to Company K would be eaten on. In fact, we got one steak a month. And the mess sergeant immediately took it, unwrapped it, and in front of all the KPs, ate it. It's prerogative of rank, you know, rank. So the KPs are back there watching the first cups. And I can see the outside man standing out there. And there's only me and Edwards. We're late. We come rushing up. And here's the sergeant, the cook. All right, you guys, Shepherd, Edwards. Let's see what I can do with you today. I got an idea. All right, you two guys, go on back to the other side of the icebox and go into the storeroom. In the storeroom, you'll find on the floor something for you. Get at it. Okay? On the double move, get the lead. You'll have to fill in the rest. So Edwards and I run in there, happy, you see, that we were going to get nothing less than this. And we run into this room, and there on the floor, you can't believe it, on the floor, the first time we'd ever seen anything like this in Company K. I mean, our food consisted of stuff that was always dried. I mean, it came in little sacks, dried eggs, dried potatoes, I mean, dried Kool-Aid. And there on the floor, piled up, I mean, this high, great, you can't believe it, 400 fresh chickens. With the feathers on. Their feet sticking out. They all had eyes. I looked at those 400 chickens. And Edwards looked at those 400. Edwards was a true city man. He had never seen a chicken outside of a croquet. And the two of us looked at these chickens, and Edwards said, "What are they?" I says, "Chickens, Edwards." He says, "Chickens?" I says, "Chickens." He says, "What do you do with them?" I says, "I have a suspicion." And instantly, the mess sergeant is in. He says, "All right, you guys, I want them fetters off. I want you to unzip them. Remove what you find inside. And I want it all done by noon." Have you ever sat down with a friend of yours and shucked 400 chickens? I'll tell you, it is one of life's more edifying experiences. And we finally got the feathers off of them. And you know that each chicken, even though they had been dead for many, many months, each chicken complained. Feathers all over, see? We got this hot, great big can of hot water. We put each one in the hot water. You know, each time they go in, they go, "Ah!" Tear the feathers off. And now we've got all these naked chickens. And the mess sergeant comes in. He says, "All right." He says, "Here." He tosses us a couple of great big toad stickers. Edwards has got one. I got the other. He says, "Now here, I want to show you what you do." The sergeant has a knife. So he says, "Here's what you do." You go, "Gah, gah, 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 blah, 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 diggity, diggity, boing." There it is. It looks like a real chicken now. You know, like the kind you see in cartoons, you know, with the little feet sticking out. See, how did he do it? He said, "Okay, now you do what I do, and do it quick, 400 of them." And he says, "And then you guys can take a half an hour off before you get on those onions." That 400 pounds of onions going later for us to peel. So we started out to clean the chickens. Sat down, see, took a chicken. Well, now, I, first of all, did not know the chickens were made out of rubber. These were rubber chickens. I mean, they were hard as rock, so I take the knife. There's 400 of them piled up. Well, 20 minutes later, I finally make this jagged gash in a chicken. And stuff starts coming out. Edward says, "What's that?" I said, "Well, there's stuff in the chickens." He says, "You mean this is in all chickens?" He says, "Mine's sick. Look at it." I says, "No, that's its liver." He says, "That's liver." Up to that point, you know, chicken liver he had liked. Now he realized where home base was. And so we worked all afternoon on these chickens. And that was the kind of job that the outside man missed. And so getting away from this company was like getting a reprieve from hell. And so we're waiting. We're waiting to see that list. And there it comes. Everybody crowds down there, and they're looking for their name on the list. And the way they did it was to publish the names of the guys who were assigned to duty. So you didn't want to see your name on that list. And I rushed down. Oh, boy. Well, guess whose name? Like Abu Ben Adam led all the rest to be assigned to duty over the coming holiday. Shepherd J.P., PFC, 1609-8946. Gasser, Edwards, Zinsmeister. You turn away, and you can hear the rest of the guys hollering, "Whoopee! Hooray! You know, hooray!" You want to kill them. You know, what is there to be thankful about? And so, Thanksgiving Day dawned bright and early. And there was a special order out that day. Now, this is the way they work Thanksgiving in the Army. A special order came out the night before, and it said, "All men in this command who are assigned to Thanksgiving Day duty in the camp will be allowed to sleep until 8 a.m.
Oh, they sleep till 8 o'clock in the morning. Do you know what this means?
I mean, for years, it had been 4:15. And so now, 4:15 strikes. But you see, the Army is a creature of habit. I mean, so 4:15, which should have gone by quietly, you hear... You wake up. You automatically start putting on your fatigues. And then Gasser says, hey, we can sleep till 8. And sure enough, we sank back on our sacks and laid there, and we couldn't sleep. We couldn't sleep. We just lay there and tossed, you know. You get up. Gee whiz, my bunk must have... You pull your bunk. Isn't this great, Gasser? Yeah. Hey, Edwards, how about you? Yeah. But for 3.5 hours, we just lay there, staring up. The sun now arches high over Company K. It is Thanksgiving Day. And so we go out now. We stand our little company roll call, 8:30 in the morning. Sergeant Kowalski's out there, that rotten sergeant. He walks up and down in front of us. He's got suntans on now, see. He's dressed up. He said, men, today, even though one thought of you has to be here in the camp, don't, it ain't no skin off my you-know-what. I don't want nobody to think that I'm gonna play no favorites here. And I want one thing for you to remember. This is the best damn company in the whole damn army, right? Right. That's right. And then Edwards next to me says, I wonder what the rest of the army is like if that's true. You know, there's another side to the story. And then Kowalski said, and this is where the bomb hit. He said, man, Lieutenant Cherry and I have decided that we're going to celebrate Thanksgiving here in Company K. And I want all of you guys to dress up in your Class A's. Get off them fatigues, put on your Class A's, and today at noon we will begin to celebrate Thanksgiving. All right, Corporal, dismiss the men. And that corporal stands up there. We had this little red-haired corporal from Nashville who is Kowalski's understudy. He was working in that field, you know. He said, all right, attention! At ease! Attention! Dismissed! He just liked to see us squatting down. You know, he played with us there a little bit. And so we split, you know. We go back to our tents, and there's Gasser and Edwards. And Gasser says, well, what does this look like? That's what we're going to celebrate. Says, well, I guess as long as we're here, we might as well make the best of it. And so we started to get dressed. Now, perhaps you people who've never been in the Army don't know the luxury of getting dressed in a clean pair of suntans. I mean, where you've been, you know, for weeks, you've been taking a shower with a little can of water over your head. You know, and every GI keeps one pair of suntans in reserve. Now, the suntans are the khaki uniforms, and those are kept in reserve for big moments. And so we've got our beautiful new suntans on, all sharp, little hat. It's now about, 10 o'clock in the morning. You know that feeling on Sunday when you're a kid and you're all dressed up? And 2 hours later, you're supposed to go visit your grandmother, and you're told to keep clean, and don't play, don't do nothing, just stand over by the refrigerator. You know that feeling of standing around, all dressed up. You see your kid brother, and he's all dressed up. Well, all of Company K stood around, see. Now, we're assigned to duty, but there's no duty today. We're all dressed up. Our ties. Walk around. There are our tents sitting there, you know. The sun is high. And we're waiting for 12. Time dragged. And then at 12:05, that bugle blew. That is the chow call. And so we all lined up. Into the mess hall we go. And they've got tablecloths. Somewhere Sergeant Kowalski has got white tablecloths. All dressed up, we felt, you know, that feeling of being foreign. You don't belong here. Walked in. And there are the KPs, and they're wearing Class A's. They're walking around with trays. We sit down. And each one of us has got a new clean mess kit. We had no crockery in this company. We each had a new mess kit sitting there. We're waiting for food. And then suddenly, from out behind the mess hall, came Sergeant Kowalski with Lieutenant Cherry. And they've got a great big tureen. Kowalski comes out and he says, "Happy Thanksgiving, you guys." We're sitting. Says, "I said happy Thanksgiving. You're going to have a happy Thanksgiving, right?" I said, "You're going to be happy." Right. And then he opened up the tureen. Big flourish. And it is a turkey. It is a great big turkey made out of S.O.S. They had molded it. Kowalski says, "All right, KPs, serve the turkey. Isn't it great we got a turkey, fellas?" So they served each one of us little S.O.S. with little cranberries on the side. And they broke out the mixed nuts. We sat there for a while. And then, out of the back, came the corporal. And he's dressed as a pilgrim. So help me, I'm not kidding you. This is a little pageant in the Army. They made a little, you know, out of black paper. He's got a little pilgrim hat. He comes out with an M1. You know how pilgrims always carry guns? He's got this M1, you know, and he's got a bandolier with the clips hanging all over him. And he says, "Happy Thanksgiving. And now let's all give a moment of prayer, men, for all the things that we got to be thankful for. And I've called out the chaplain from the 4th Battalion, and he's come down to lead you in prayers." And the chaplain walks in. And incidentally, the chaplain was a mythological figure. Right? In fact, all through the Army, there was a word of advice given about chaplains. Whenever you were in trouble, somebody says, "Go tell it to the chaplain." Well, I remember the time I tried it. You know, I had a lot of hang-ups. You know, I wanted to get out for a couple of weeks. And this has been going on for a year. And I went down and I went in to see this chaplain. And in the front of the tent, there was always this guy who was called the chaplain's assistant. He was a tall, thin guy with rimless glasses. You know, that kind that looks like somehow they have been directly hooked into the word from birth. And he's standing there at the tent. And I walk up and I said, "I want to see the chaplain." I tried to cry, see. "I want to see the chaplain." He says, "What for?" "Well, I want to see him. It's a personal problem." He says, "Well, the chaplain will see you in 10 minutes. But it's got to be important." "It's important. It's important. Oh, God, is it important?" You know, this chick that I'd been going with back home, there was a little suspicious note creeping into her letters. And I wanted to check, you know, hide in the bushes outside of her house. And see if what I thought was happening was happening. But I couldn't tell him that. You know, I told him my mother's wooden leg was sprouting. A lot of trouble, you know, and I had to get home, and the garage was falling down. My old man's gas tank had a leak in it. I had to help him fix the valves on the holes. You know, it's a terrible moment. And I finally get in to see the chaplain. And he's sitting there. Very official. He's got this round face. He looked like a disenfranchised dentist. You know, he had these big, big rimless glasses, and he's sitting there waiting for me. And out in the front of the tent, the corporal, who was the chaplain's assistant, began to play on what they called an M2 folding model field organ. You ever seen one of those? You can get them on the surplus market. They fold up, you know. And they're GI colored, and he's out there playing, you know, something like da 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 da. Something very pious, maybe bringing in the sheaves. That's always a good one. He's playing away, and I walk into the chaplain. The chaplain, remember, is a captain. Don't forget that. I am a yardbird. I am so far down that they wouldn't even let me snipe butts. So I come in, salute. Sir, I have permission to see the chaplain, sir. And he's sitting there. His bar is shining. He looks up and he says, yes. You know how the chaplains sound. And I said, sir, I have permission to see the chaplain, sir, on a personal problem. Problem of greatest import to myself. And he says, attention, private. Somehow, you know, I could see things were going downhill. He says, attention. I says, yes, sir. Just give your name, rank, and serial number. Oh. I couldn't remember my name. I mean, when you're looking at God, you don't remember a lot of stuff. I said, yes. Shepherd, JP1609-8946, PBT. Yes, sir, company K, sir. Be seated. Well, he was the kind, you know, that had this vast thorax cavity. I mean, he was used to berating an enormous congregation of sinners. And you could just hear, he had that kind of voice, you know, that always says, God. That's a special word, God. And so, he said, very official type, you know. And I sit there and I said, may I tell the chaplain my personal problem, sir? Of course. That's what I am here for. And I am sure that God in his infinite wisdom will see fit to give me the proper solution to your problems. I had no idea God somehow was looking down on Company K. I mean, you know, I said, Chaplain, I gotta get home. See, my father's a drinker. My poor dad. My father's a drinker, and he fell down the stairs the other day. And he knocked over all the jars that my mother canned the tomatoes down to the basement. Oh, and he broke them all. And now my family say, I'm ad-libbing. I can't think what to say. I can't say, I got to go home and see whether my chick is swinging with that guy next door. You know, my dad knocked over the tomatoes. And now my family's got no tomatoes to eat all winter. And my mother needs me to come home and help her can some more tomatoes. My father's drunk, and he can't can the tomatoes. And we need tomatoes. My father, because he's drunk all the time, and he, you know, they're rationing gas back there. They can't get no gas, and this Oldsmobile needs the valves ground. And he's drunk, and he can't grind the valves.
and it's burning too much gas. And he can't get no other coupons, and he wants me to help him grind the valves and the...
Chaplain's looking. Yes? I can see that that is a difficult problem.
I said, yeah. You don't know my family. My dad beats my mother, too, see? And my mother says if I don't get home pretty soon, that my dad is going to beat her, and I just better get home. And, you know, it's so terrible. My dad never laid a hand on my mother in his whole life. And the only thing my dad ever drank was pickle juice. He used to love to drink pickle juice at night, you know. Once in a while, a can of beer. And if there was anything my mother hated, it was canned tomatoes. She broke out in a rash just thinking of them. But I'm ad-libbing. You know how it is, you wind. You know that old slogan, when we decide, what is it? When we set a course to deceive. Oh, what a tangled web we weave. And I had woven this fantastic web. My old man is a drunkard. He keeps falling down the stairs and breaking the tomatoes. My mother's got a bad leg. It's a wooden leg, and it's got twigs growing out of it. And so I'm waiting, see? And I'm so hungry. And I thought I was going to get the pass. 2 weeks. When all of a sudden the chaplain said to me, God in his infinite wisdom has given me the solution to your program. I realize that your problem is one of infinite difficulties. And I have just one word of advice. Why don't you go and get your card punched? The chaplain was telling me to get my chaplain card punched. He was telling me to take my TS card and get it punched at the chaplain. And then it suddenly occurred to me that even chaplains go someplace to tell it to the chaplain. And the chaplain looks at him and says, well, that's tough, Jack. That's tough. Why don't you get your card punched? And it was that moment that I had this great revelation that no matter where you go, there is always somebody above you. And as you get above him, there's somebody above him. And that ultimately, when you get up finally before that great bar of justice, and you look down, and you think you've been a sinner, and the great judge looks at you and says, nope, you're going to heaven. You're going to feel cheated. Because you wonder what the other ones did that you missed. So let's give the sinners a hand out there in the darkness. And we'll be back next.